News, traffic, weather, and more. 1039 LI News Radio.
Well, it's always good to get this next gentleman's take on things. We had the county executive on yesterday, and now a former county executive. Part of our second spotlight segment on Long Island, two of two. Steve Levy, of course, Common Sense Strategies, as well as a former assemblyman and, yes, county executive right here in Suffolk County. And always great to catch up and get his ideas on things. Mr. Levy, how are you, sir?
Wonderful, Jay. Thanks for having me on again.
Always great having you. And I figure it was a good time to get you on because you always have so many great things to say. Common Sense Strategies, phenomenal letter pointed out by you in a lot of different areas. And, you know, I'll begin with the tax reform bill, what it means for the county. We've had so many different takes on this from our congressional leaders out here, our assembly men, our state senators as well. You know, it's a tough one. I tell you, Steve Levy, it's a tough bill for Long Island right now.
Yeah, you know, if I were a local congressman, I'd vote against it for parochial reasons, because we indeed do give out more from New York and Long Island to Washington than we get back. With that said, nationwide, it's going to be a big boost to the economy. If you're not in a high-earning state that uses the state deduction quite a bit, like New York, California, or Jersey, you're going to do very, very well. Not only the standard deduction that's going to be increased, but the tangential benefits that will come about from the cut in the corporate rate that should provide not only more jobs, but better jobs. And even here in New York, there's this assumption that, oh, everyone is going to get clobbered. Well, that's not true. You know, there's a very, very big chunk of people who do not itemize in the first place. So, Jay, if you don't itemize, you're not really using the state tax deduction. So you're going to see your standard deduction double. On top of that, there's the alternative minimum tax that's basically been dumped for most taxpayers. I don't know about you, but I get clobbered by the alternative minimum tax. So that's going to mitigate a lot of the loss that comes about from not having the state deduction anymore. Again, I don't think it's good overall for New York because we use that state deduction so much because our tax is so high here, and I would have voted against the bill. But there are going to be winners and losers in New York. Not everyone is going to lose. A lot of people are going to win. And nationwide, you're going to see a stronger economy that will bring in better wages, and that's the ultimate goal.
You know, I agree nationwide, Steve, but, you know, listen, the overall thing here for me is, and again, if I voted on it, it would have been a firm no, no questions asked. You know, either way, you know, when you impose a $10,000 cap on taxpayers who deduct their state and local property taxes, and the cap is not adjusted, by the way, for inflation, well, that's a big loss for many. And you got to remember now, not only Long Island, but across the state, you know, 46% of homeowners in this state have a tax bill higher than $10,000. So it affects this state right in such a huge way. But not only that, and I've said this all along here, it's not only the cap of 10K, but it's also the fact that the values will drop. You know, it could be as much as 20%, and that to me is a huge hit here, because when you're trying to grow, but here's the thing, Steve. If you're trying to grow the island and keep young people here, and we talk about it all the time, you know, how are you going to keep the youth here after colleges and everything else? I mean, how are they ever going to buy a house? Well, this is going to turn people off to buying a house. They're going to rent, or maybe just say, "The heck with it all, I'm going to get out of here."
Oh, I'm with you on that. And it actually could have been even worse. I mean, they were talking about preventing deductions on your interest payments to come down even further to $500,000. And many people would say, well, if you're borrowing $500,000, you're in that rich segment. Well, not necessarily on Long Island. You know, thankfully, they bumped it back up to $750,000. But you know, we have enough problems here on Long Island. We send so much more money to Washington than we get back. Now, that's
that's what it is.
Bad starter to go with taking away the state deduction. Now, we spend too much darn money in this state. It would be nice if we got our taxes down, but don't hold your breath on that coming too soon. And you are right. There's no inflationary factor to that $10,000 cap. So we know what's going to happen with those property taxes of $10,000. By next year, they'll be $11,500. The year after that, they'll be $14,000. And you're still only able to deduct $10,000. So that's why it really overall was not good for Long Island or the state. But nationwide, I mean, there is going to be a boost to this economy. We've been stagnated at the lowest recovery to a recession in a century. People were getting jobs back, but the jobs they had in 2007 were better paying, more career advancement. You need something to boost this economy so that wages start to grow. And I'll tell you, if you lived to the late 80s after the tax cut, it was a good time to be an employee. And hopefully this newer generation will get a taste of that.
And I got to tell you also, let's not forget, 2025, everything goes to pot anyway, Steve.
Well, I'm not sure of that, Jay. I mean, it's eons away. You're going to have different Congress, different president. You're going to have a different picture with the national budget. I mean, who's to say that what they call the permanent tax breaks are actually permanent? It's permanent only until you change it. It's temporary only until you change it and make it permanent or keep it temporary. You don't know what's going to happen 7 to 8 years down the road. So, listen, I think a tax cut is nice to have for most Americans right now. There'll be a great deal of pressure in 7 years to extend them. But I'd like to see at that time that they bring back the deduction for the local taxes and the state tax.
Talking with Steve Levy, Common Sense Strategies, former assemblyman, of course, former county executive. Steve, talking a little bit yesterday about the Suffolk County legislature in general. What's your take on this whole thing regarding campaign finances? You know, I know there's a lot of controversy there. They lost, I think it was a vote of like 11-7. In essence, a lot of people up in arms over this. You know, all the Republicans voted against it. Al Krupski did as well. What's your take on all of this individual stuff, donors and everything else coming into play here? County executive thought it was kind of a win-win here. What do you think?
Well, it's a mixed bag. I've always been a supporter of the concept of public financing for this reason. If you want to be a candidate who tells the party leaders, no, yeah, I don't want to be your puppet. I want to do my own thing. If you want to tell that to the union, if you want to tell that to the big interest, I don't want to have to be dependent on money to get elected. It is a great thing to be able to have this pool of money available that's not tainted, where you're owing something back. What I don't like about this bill is that it didn't incorporate a lot of provisions that would have ended that type of hostage taken by unions and party leaders. When I did my public financing bill, I said, look, we'll have this money available. And by the way, it was through a voluntary source of money, or it was from a surcharge that we placed on county vendors. But we also told any candidate who would take that money, here's the catch. You have to agree to no longer take money from any county union over whom you're negotiating that contract, or any county vendor that is getting a contract from the county. So that was the beauty of a full campaign finance reform bill. You get money from this untainted pot, so you don't have to get on your hands and knees to a party leader or a union, but then you have to agree not to take their money. This, on the one hand, is good in that it gives you a pool of money to help get elected, but it doesn't prohibit you from still taking the money from the union or these party leaders, and that's the problem.
Well,
overall,
you know,
it's good to have something, but I wish it would have been better.
Steve, you know, this bill, it's still a little up and down for me, at least. I mean, to me, is it really going to be ineffective at reducing the influence of wealthy donors from some of these county races? You know, listen, we know large donations can still go to these political parties. You know that as well as anyone, or some of these committees. So, in essence, what is it really saying?
Yeah, that's soft money. You're absolutely right that even though there might be a ban of a union or a vendor giving money directly to the candidate, they can still give the soft money to the party, and then potentially it filters back down to candidates, or they do it on their own, supporting the candidate without directly giving it to the candidate. But there's still something good to be said about, even though that might be happening, if you as a candidate want to be able to have a fighting chance against an incumbent, at least now you can get a pot of money to do so. The unions, the special interests, they tend to gravitate toward the incumbent, and then the incumbent becomes, you know, bought off, not necessarily in an illegal way, but they become hostage to those big unions, which is why Long Island and New York is so unaffordable. Those special interests are so powerful. If you are a candidate who says, I want to take them on, I would never be able to raise the money to do it. At least now there'll be a pot of money where you'll have a fighting chance. I think the 4-to-1 match is a bit high. When I did it, Jay, I called for a 2-to-1 match. That means every dollar you raise, you get $2 in the public money. This bill calls for a $4 match as they do in New York City. That can be very, very expensive. But, you know, it is something trying to change the system to give challengers a fighting chance.
Talking with Steve Lee. Steve, you talked about the wage freeze. It's interesting here. State Senate and the Assembly unanimously approving legislation will allow public union employee pay increases based on longevity, even during wage freezes. And listen, NASL unions love it. NYFA hates it. Listen, the freeze, I guess, from what, 2011 through 14, saved the county a couple hundred million dollars, but kept new police officers stuck at a pay grade of around, what, $34,000 or so. Interesting take on things here.
Well, this is exactly what I'm talking about regarding the hold that unions have over our elected officials. By the way, Jay, it's often both parties. You would think that, you know, the Republicans are a little more fiscally conservative, so to speak, at least in general terms. Not always in New York and not always on Long Island. Depends who we're talking about. But it was almost unanimous. I think it might have been unanimous in the state legislature where the unions came along and said, look, we don't care if there's a control board that's put in there to prevent the county from collapsing financially. We don't want to have to live with a wage freeze, and we want to continue to get our step increases, even if the control board says we have to put a freeze in effect. Then what's the point of having a control board if you're going to get around this anyway? Jay, 70% of a budget is personnel, and if you can't control those costs in times of crisis, you really have no other choice but to go bankrupt. So the control board had been weak in Nassau over the last couple of decades. The one thing that they did do to try to stave off an implosion in Nassau is they implemented that wage freeze, and now they're trying to undo it through legislation on an end round around to circumvent the control board. Then why have a control board? To save everybody time and fill out your bankruptcy papers.
No question about it. And, you know, you look at all the instances with an Nassau Interim Finance Authority, you almost have to ask yourself, this state-appointed control board, what has it exactly done in the last 6 or 7 years, which is really, you know, listen, they have balked a little bit here and there. Finally, they say, listen, you're going to have to cut $18 million out somehow. You know, listen, I got to tell you, NYFA has been lax, in my opinion, as far as exactly what they were put in place to do when you think about it, Steve.
Oh, yeah, you hit it. They've been a toothless tiger. And Jay, this goes back 15 years. Remember, this is when Swazi first came in to take over after what was inherited from Tom Gallada. this was one of the richest counties in the nation, and they were nearly bankrupt because they were spending like drunken sailors, and they weren't taking care of their finances. So the state appoints this board to prevent fiscal collapse, and they were going along to get along for all of those years. I have to say, though, this new fella, Adam Barsky, who came from the Giuliani administration, has been a different character. And he's been telling these guys in Nassau, look, you better really come up with these cuts or we'll cut for you. And this is the first time that you're seeing the control board act like a real control board. You've had control boards, Jay, in other places like Detroit, elsewhere. They actually cut back on pensioners and really do a number. We don't want to have to get to that point. So that's why you need the control boards to start early and to take effective measures so you're not going into people's pensions and really creating havoc. A little bit of give back here and there can make a big difference over the long haul, but they did practically nothing in Nassau for all those years. The one thing they did do, the wage freeze helped out a lot. But then in an election year, they gave all the money back, and now you see a measure in the state saying, no, you can't hold back on the steps anymore during the control board's tenure. It's absolutely crazy, but it underscores why New York is such an unaffordable place in which to live.
And I got to tell you, I agree with you 100% regarding Barsky. I think Adam Barsky needs maybe to show a little bit more muscle. I think he's done that lately. And listen, this just to me accentuates the poor job. I happen to like him personally. But as the head guy there, John Kamen, who's now working for Bologna here in Southern, I thought he did a very poor job. You know, you talk about a very weak tenure for Mr. Kamen when really he could have exercised a lot of strength, and he never did.
Well, generally speaking, there's a reticence for a lot of these folks. And remember, they're political appointees. You know, they're political appointees from the governor. And, you know, some county executives, like the Nassau executive, had a very close relationship with the governor. And they talk to each other, and they may say, hey, please don't have this guy come down too hard on me. But that's not why a control board is there. A control board is to get you independent and to do the hard stuff. Now, if I were Laura Curran, the incoming county executive, I would welcome them doing the hard work so that she doesn't have to. If I were the county executive right now in Suffolk, I would welcome the control board because they give you the ability to deal with the contracts that you are otherwise handcuffed in dealing with. You know, once the contract is put in place, a county executive or a legislature can't unilaterally go in there and change the terms. A control board can. You should be working with the with leverage when you sit down and negotiate with the unions who would otherwise give back nothing. Now you can say, hey, listen, we need X, Y, and Z. We need more efficiencies out of you. If you don't, this control board is going to start whacking people pretty heavy. So it's been misused and underused for all these years. It's starting to get a little better in Nassau. The incoming executive there should welcome them. If I county executive, yeah. Welcome. It gives you a tool.
No question. By the way, it's a good job by Laura regarding these contracts, putting an inspector general in place, which I think will help out the situation. Only got about a minute or two left, Steve. I want to talk about FOIL and the Freedom of Information Law. You also write about the governor signing, strengthening the New York's Freedom of Information Law, which allows any person to request public records from government agencies. You know, I got to tell you a little bit regarding this. You know, I find it ironic that the governor actually signed this, yet he himself doesn't practice what he preaches. I mean, at this point in time, he is the one who is not making anything transparent, at least in my thinking. I mean, even when he has press conferences, he has his own selection of reporters to kind of convey information. I mean, to me, this is not being transparent at all. I find it somewhat ironic here with his governor.
Jay, I missed the first part of that with phone trouble. I think you were talking about the The foil, right?
With the governor,
right?
The governor signing the legislation. I just stated I find it ironic that maybe he should practice what he preaches. He has been anything but transparent, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you know, that's why this bill is so important. I'll give you an example. I'm the executive director of the Center for Cost Effective Government. We've actually brought a lawsuit in Suffolk County that will hopefully set a precedent for the rest of the state and the nation, saying that we're suing over the fact that our taxpayer dollars go toward freeing up union leaders from their regular jobs to lobby to get better wages and benefits, and we think that that should be paid for out of the dues and not taxpayer funds. Well, long story short, we put in a Freedom of Information request just to get the contracts between the county and the union. It took us 4 months, Jay. It's supposed to take 30 days. And, you know, we're waiting, and then you have to threaten lawsuits. And if there is a provision that says if you don't abide and get that information over to the person in the public seeking the information, that you're going to pay their attorney's fee, all of a sudden, that's going to change. In fact, when I was in the state assembly back in the early 2000s, I supported such a bill strenuously. And it's funny, it took all this time for us to get to this point. But it's a good bill. Listen, regardless of what the governor's history is on this, if the bill is signed, more power to him. I'm glad they finally have this reform. It's long overdue. And it's not just for politicians. It's for regular folks who want to get information out of their government. If they stonewall you now, you can go after them for the attorney fees, and it's a big deterrent against them stonewalling.
I got to tell you, and in closing, I'll say this. In this state, transparency is needed by far anywhere else because of all that has happened. We look at all the corruptive practices that have taken place. We need to know what's going on. The people of this state, this governor needs to be more transparent. Steve Levy, want to wish you a very happy holiday, happy new year, and we'll talk to you soon after. How's that?
You too, Jay. Thanks for having me on the show again. Anytime.